This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
Well, no JVT today, but you know what? We have to move on. Wes Reynolds is always here on a Monday. He is here. Tim Murray sitting in. You know, Wes, I usually come on, talk a little college football in the first hour of this program. JVT is doing some research work right now. So I said, you know what? Me and you have never done a show together since I've gotten here.
No time like the present. JVT in the basement, we'll call it, working on the NBA betting guide, which I can't wait to dig into because that'll help me out. JVT is more in tune with the NBA than I am, so I actually use that because there's only so much time that you could have to do certain sports. So that'll help me out with the NBA. I'm more of a college basketball guy, as are you, so looking forward to reading that publication.
And we've got college basketball going on as we speak. The Maui Invitational, Wes, in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina.
And it is nice. It's not Maui, but it is nice.
Yes. I know Matt Eumanns. He is a big believer in the Maui Invitational. He's been multiple times. And the Maui Invitational in Maui is spectacular. I've been there before when I was a kid. Asheville, North Carolina. I'm an East Coast guy. I got to represent the East Coast here. Asheville is a beautiful place. Beautiful place.
If you love the outdoors, it's a great place to be.
So, once again, no Maui, but it's not too shabby. And the Maui Invitational is underway. Halftime, Davidson trailing Texas 43-39. We'll keep you updated on that game. The Hoosiers coming up later on this afternoon. I think that game will tip off just after we conclude here. Maybe a little bit in the second hour.
I think the bottom of the hour, we'll get it going. Indiana Providence, look, really good matchup for both teams, actually, because we kind of don't know what these teams are yet. They played an opener against overmatched opponents, so I think, and look, and it's lined appropriately, Indiana now has flipped to the favorite, about 1.5 market wide, so we're going to get, I think, at least an indication early on. I think this is a good game for both programs.
Yeah, we're going to hit on some college hoops in this show. As Wes mentioned, both he and I, big college hoop guys, but we're coming off of an eventful NFL Sunday. We've got Monday Night Football. We've got Tuesday Night Football. We've got George Shahuri joining us at the top of the second hour. Ralph Russo from the AP to talk college football at 10:45 Pacific, 1:45 Eastern. But I got to start with the big news. You're the Indiana guy for the network. Michael Penix Jr. This is there's no beating around the bush. This just sucks. I mean, one of the better stories of the college football season, and Michael Penix Jr. has been a big reason for it. And we get the news this morning from Bruce Feldman that it is a lower leg injury. I believe it is a torn ACL, Wes.
Yeah,
so Michael Penix Jr. done for the year. This stinks. I mean, Indiana has been a great story, hung in right there with Ohio State, and now you lose your quarterback for the remainder of the year. They visit Camp Randall this weekend where they are now at Circa, Wes, a 13-point dog.
Yeah, and this is the same ACL that Michael Penix Jr. tore back in 2018. And, of course, last year, midseason, shoulder injury put him out. So three straight seasons, he's had a season-ending injury. It'll now be Jack Tuttle that will go as quarterback for Indiana. Not a lot of sample size. Came in, pretty much played the entire fourth quarter against Maryland. So not a lot to go on there. But Tuttle, former four-star recruit, originally started at Utah, was originally born in Indianapolis and then raised out in California. So, look, he's a guy that has a lot of talent. Just has never gotten a lot of opportunity to play because he was behind Peyton Ramsey, who have now, of course, is the starting quarterback at Northwestern as a grad transfer, and also behind Penix. So it'll be Tuttle going. The adjustment is about what I thought it would be. Going up to 13.5. I kind of was maybe hoping to see 14 or above. I don't think it's going to approach that number, but Indiana, look, got to take an opportunity going to Wisconsin, who hasn't played in a couple weeks on Saturday. Indiana also comes off. They clinch back-to-back winning seasons for the first time since 1994 when I was a high school senior. So that tells you, that gives away my age. It's been a long time in Indiana to have sustained success. But now got to move forward. And look, Tom Allen, I know he's kind of poked fun at a little bit for the rah-rah kind of speeches, the videos that have come out. But you know what? They believe. and it's working. So you don't argue with results. And I think he's going to do the same with this team. This kid, these kids, I think, will come together, and they absolutely believe in what Coach Allen is selling right now.
You know, the crazy thing and about the Big Ten right now is you would think head-to-head, Ohio State beats Indiana, right, Wes? Mm-hmm. Well, Ohio State's going to go to the Big Ten championship, unless they have a game canceled, which is possible this weekend. So there is a realistic possibility here that Indiana could play for the Big Ten championship if that Ohio State game this weekend against Michigan State is canceled. So that's something to keep a close eye on, because the rules are you have to play at least, what,
six games. Yes.
If the league average is eight games played, and I think doing the math from, you know, over the weekend, if this Ohio State game this weekend against Michigan State were to get canceled, it would be a uphill climb for the Buckeyes. They would need a lot more postponements in order to get into the Big Ten championship.
Because it would set up Indiana against Northwestern. Northwestern, of course, fell this week at Michigan State. They basically have to win one more game to clinch that, because now Wisconsin is kind of in that scenario where they've already had multiple games canceled. So would potentially set up the Peyton Ramsey Bowl in Indianapolis, the former Indiana quarterback now in Evanston with Northwestern. So we shall see. I mean, part of me is like, hey, I'd like to see my school play in the Big Ten championship, but it would feel a little tainted because of the fact that Ohio State did beat you on the field.
Right.
So, you know, we'll get into that with Ralph Russo too, because I want to ask him, hey, if Ohio State is like 6-0, at the end of the season, or maybe even 7-0, assuming they play these last two games. Now, Michigan has some COVID-19 issues, so that could put that game in jeopardy in 2 weeks. But is that going to be enough for the Buckeyes to stay in the top four? For me, it should. But I don't know if the voters are going to feel the same way.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Obviously, the Pac-12 this weekend took a massive hit. Oregon losing on Friday night to Oregon State. Now, USC, who had their game postponed this weekend, they are the last glimmer of hope. I think it's unlikely for the Pac-12 to get in. You know, the committee has flat out said, and we don't have to dive fully into college football because we got a lot of NFL to talk about here. The committee has said they don't care about conference championships. That is not a requirement. We know that. Notre Dame a couple years ago got in. We've seen Alabama get in as a non-conference champion. So we could see a team like Ohio State get in, because remember, Wes, it's not just the Big Ten championship game by itself that final weekend. It is those crossover games. So in theory, you could see Ohio State play a team like Wisconsin, which could be a really nice resume booster, assuming that Wisconsin wins out from here on.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that, I think, in the SEC too, because it looks like Alabama will pretty much lock up the SEC West and more than likely would play Florida. Well, all of a sudden you got a Texas A&M team sitting like number five, number six in the CFP rankings, had a couple games canceled that they intend to make up in mid-December. So at least they stay in front of the committee. And that's something I want to ask Ralph about, to see, is it realistic that the Aggies can kind of finagle their way through the back door into the playoff?
And as Wes mentioned, Ralph Russo will join us in about 30 minutes or so. We'll keep our eyes on college hoops as that's going on right now in Asheville, North Carolina. Davidson went off as a 7.5-point dog against Texas. First half line was 4. I had Davidson plus 4. It was a push, despite Davidson having a 4-point lead with under 8 minutes to go. I digress. Let's get to the NFL. And Wes, it was a good, if you're a big fader of the public, i.e., Josh Applebaum, we know he likes to go against the public. It was a very profitable day for you. Now, it didn't end great because the public was all over the Packers and they ended up dominating the Bears, who were just a disaster. But we tweeted out, Veasan here tweeted out the there was this heavy action, Wes, on the public, and a lot of these ugly dogs came home. Falcons destroy the Raiders. The Giants win but don't cover against the Bengals. The Vikings win but don't cover against the Panthers. So there you have it. The Cardinals, according to PointsBet USA, we tweeted this out yesterday before those 1 o'clock games, the Cardinals laying a point against the Patriots. 90% of the bets on the Cardinals. Cardinals lose by 3, game-winning field goal. The Saints end up coming home, but look at that list right there. Cardinals don't cover, Giants don't cover, Dolphins do, Raiders don't, Saints do, Browns don't, and the Bills shouldn't have, but they end up because Anthony Lynn doesn't know how to coach towards the end of that game. So I think it was a pretty positive day for the folks behind the counter.
Yeah, it was. And look, I like to mix in a couple ugly dogs sure. on these NFL cards. Of course, not only just in pocket, but in the contest. Because, look, you want to always try to beat the consensus in these Circa Sports Million, the Westgate Super Contest, and other contests out there. You want to try to kind of zig when maybe the rest of the field is going to zag a little bit. So that's what I did with the Jaguars yesterday. They got into the back door, and you also got to have a little luck and have sure. some bounces go your way in these things. With the Jaguars, I did it also with the Bucks. Got in late.
It didn't look good early, but it did not look promising.
But in a couple I played in pocket, just the Raiders spot at Atlanta, when you get a team that's a home dog the week before and then they go on the road and be a road favorite, I think since 2012 it's like maybe a little bit over 40%, 41, 42% against the spread for a home dog that then becomes a road favorite next week. I just thought it was an awful spot for the Raiders, and it moved up to 3.5 because of the Julio Jones and the Todd Gurley injuries, but no problem for Atlanta, 43-6 all over the Raiders. So those are spots you kind of want to look at, and I think those role reversals, and JBT and I always talk about that on the opening line show on Sunday. When you get a team that's used to being an underdog for all these weeks, then all of a sudden they become a pretty sizable favorite, you're not used to that. And you kind of saw that with the Giants yep. yesterday. Once it got to 6.5, after, because they accommodated for the Joe Burrow injury, because it was a look ahead Bengals -3, then it became 4.5. And I was saying over the weekend, I'm like, you're late to the party if you're betting the Giants here.
Right.
You know, I would not lay this with the Giants, not necessarily endorsing the Bengals, but it would be Bengals or nothing. And then what happens? Bengals get within the number late, and you just have, you got to understand when you look at those look ahead lines, and that's what we get in the NFL that we don't have in college football. Those are so valuable mm-hmm. because that shows you the market perception, how it switches from week to week. And I think that those are lines that you want to look at. And as a reminder, at Superbook over at Westgate, those come out like 10 days before the game day.
Well, and there's a similar thing too to that. I think that's a great point, because I look at it when you talk about betting college football too. You know, people at times like to follow the steam, which is fair, you mm-hmm. know, game day steam. But think about where the folks at Circa set those lines on Sunday. That's where they believe the line should be. Mm-hmm. Now it moves with the market, and it may move significantly amount of points, but sometimes you kind of revert back to
right.
where the line was initially set by Metcalf and his crew, and you think, okay, maybe this has moved too much and it's now time to pounce on the other side.
Yeah, and one of the things too you're now seeing with the college football, you're seeing a lot less variance.
Yes.
The numbers are getting tighter
mm-hmm.
at this point of the season, because one of the things I always say, regardless of sport, when you're starting a betting season, the guys behind the counter aren't 100% sure of their numbers either. And you as bettors and us as bettors are not sure of our numbers necessarily. But as you get into like week 12 of the NFL, week 13, you get into November, December of college football, you're going to see a lot less variance in terms of the moves that you would see on those openers that they put out at Circa on Sunday morning.
You know, going back to yesterday, one game, James Salinas and I were talking about it on the pregame show, and James was on the Tennessee Titans. I like them as well, too. They go off at 2.5?
I believe at some spots they did. I took them at 3.
Yeah.
I think you guys did as well.
Yeah, it was 3 before kick, and you talk about spot. It seemed like a great spot. They were embarrassed a couple weeks ago on Thursday Night Football at home. And Derrick Henry comes out and bulldozes over this Indianapolis Colts team. And something to note, you know, following this Tennessee team, and Jacob pointed it out as well in our rundown here, it is now the month of November. It is go time for Derrick Henry. Derrick mm-hmm. Henry, 178 yards yesterday, 3 touchdowns. I want to start with Tennessee and then pivot to Indianapolis, because this vaunted Colts defense has now been scored upon quite a bit these past 2 weeks,
right.
Wes, especially early on against Green Bay in the first half, and then yesterday, 35 points in the first half for Tennessee. But now you're looking at Tennessee, they're 8-3, and it feels like Derrick Henry is now coming into beast mode, to steal the old Marshawn Lynch nickname there.
Right, and it also helped, not that Derrick Henry needs the help.
DeForest Buckner.
DeForest Buckner, yep. Danico Autry, Bobby Okereke.
Yep.
Pretty much the entire middle run stoppage triangle, if you will, for the Indianapolis Colts was out yesterday. And for those that were wondering, well, was DeForest Buckner worth the price the Colts paid? Yes.
He was.
Yes. Answer, yes. Yeah. He was. That was well on display yesterday at Lucas Oil Stadium. And you did think that the spot was good for Tennessee. And then once I saw these injuries on defense, I was like, okay, you know, because I almost felt that the Colts were due kind of for a little bit of a clunker.
Yep.
After they had gotten the win at Tennessee, the win over Green Bay, something seemed missing with the team. And you saw it too. They made some undisciplined plays when it was 14-14. They had stopped Tennessee, got a sack on Tannehill. So Tennessee's going to kick and likely go up three. Rakusin gets called for a holding penalty. Totally changed the momentum of the game, and then the race was on for Tennessee.
Yeah, and you can just look at the playoffs there. It's so cluttered. That game was so pivotal, not only for one team to take the lead in the AFC South, but you look at it right there as we have the graphic up. The Titans are now the 3 seed because they lead the AFC South, and the Colts drop all the way to the 7 seed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is so clustered in there in the AFC. We got to hit a break here, but, you know, Indianapolis... Is this a bounce back spot against Houston under a field goal now against the Houston Texans on the road?
You know, Houston is playing better offensively.
Deshaun Watson,
they are playing very well, but defensively, I mean, a couple weeks ago, Cam Newton had, what, 350 yards some passing and couldn't break 100 yesterday. So this defense for Houston, not exactly the stiffest of stop units.
That's Wes Reynolds, Tim Murray. We're sitting in for JVT today. A little college football discussion. Is the Heisman Trophy still up for grabs? We'll discuss that next. It's The Edge on VSiN. It is The Edge. Tim Murray sitting in for JVT, who is hunkered down working on that NBA betting guide. We gave him no time. Season ends. JVT, write us a new guide right now. That's Wes Reynolds. He's here every single Monday. We'll be on this program quite a bit this week, Thursday and Friday, right? A lot of Wes Reynolds. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm sure that sends tangles into the VSiN Nation to get more of me here on weekdays.
I'm looking forward to it. We've got a college basketball game we're keeping an eye on right now. Once again, the Maui Invitational going on in Asheville, North Carolina. First game, Davidson in Texas. Davidson went off as a 7.5-point dog. Might have actually went off at 7. I'm not sure. I played it at 7.5.
I did too.
And Davidson right down now down 2. I played more on the first half, which can end up being a push, but right now Texas 53, Davidson 51. That one 14 and change to go. Indiana coming up later on, probably tipping
11:30, 11:45 Pacific, somewhere around.
Should be a great game against Providence. Really interesting matchup later on today. UNC, UNLV. UNC a pretty significant favorite in that one. I think 12 at last check.
Yes.
On that one, we do have some breaking news. We're getting to some college football here in just a moment, but the San Francisco 49ers. I know you guys hit on this last night on the opening line show. It has now become official. The 49ers will be playing in Arizona. Here's the official statement from the 49ers. 49ers have come to an agreement with the NFL and the Arizona Cardinals, which allows the 49ers to host their weeks 13 and 14 home games against the Bills and Washington at State Farm Stadium in Arizona. They go into some quotes. Doesn't really matter. But Arizona will be hosting San Francisco. So knowing this now, and we saw, I think it was Raheem Mostert got emotional last night. Kyle Shanahan very frustrated with the lawmakers out in Santa Clara County.
Yes.
What does this do handicapping-wise for you now that San Francisco has to really pack up shop and head to Phoenix?
Yeah, and I was on the 49ers yesterday, and I think right now – health is a relative term when you're talking about the 49ers this year, but all of a sudden they're starting to gradually get at least a few guys back. And the guys they all got back yesterday that had missed an indefinite amount of time all contributed yesterday. Richard Sherman had an interception, also a tackle for loss. Kinlaw, the rookie out of South Carolina, had a pick six. Debo Samuel, 11 catches on 13 targets for well over 100 yards. So the 49ers are getting healthy, because all of a sudden, with that kind of shaky start they've had that we anticipated for the Super Bowl hangover, we forget this team was in the Super Bowl last year. So the drop off is not going to be that precipitous. There's still a lot of talent and still some good coaching on this team. And I like them, and JBT did as well, on the spot next Monday night playing a home game, not quite a home game anymore, against the Buffalo Bills, because I just thought this team's getting a little bit healthier. And I think that line was put out to accommodate for the fact of the regulations and laws out in Santa Clara County that was going to force them, because I know John Murray over at Westgate was saying this game is going to be action regardless of where the venue is going to be played. So he put that out there. But the 49ers, I think, are kind of coming along. And Buffalo, to me, they're 8-3. There's some chinks in that armor, though. The defense isn't as good as last year. They turned it over three times yesterday, and you mentioned it at the top with the Chargers really should have covered. But Anthony Lynn made some very questionable decisions for the Lightning Bolts.
I'll just say I had the Chargers in a tease, and it came home. I got it early in the week at 11.5, but I didn't feel great about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel great about it. I know that, you know, they were right on the door. And if you played the Chargers last night, I would apologize to you, but you're also backing a team that's coached by Anthony Lynn.
Yeah, I guess it's like you feel sorry for him, but it's like you also get what you deserve.
Yeah, you know better than that.
You got a 6'6 quarterback, and they line him up in the shotgun on a 4th and inches
when the offensive line is in pass pro, and he runs up to try to sneak it and gets absolutely destroyed. That end of the game scenario was something else. But going back to, once again, the breaking news, San Francisco will be playing their next two home games in Arizona. Monday Night Football, San Francisco getting 2.5 at home against Buffalo. I tend to lean with you. I feel like this line is out there begging the public to take Buffalo underneath that field goal. And, you know, George Shahuria will join the show from Pro Football Focus. I think he said it on his podcast early on in the season, Wes, which was, watch out for the 49ers when this team can get back to full health. Now, Jimmy G is not there. It's still going to be Nick Mullins. We know that. But I'm not the biggest Jimmy G fan in the world. With those other pieces coming back, with Mostert, Sherman, as you mentioned, with Kinlaw, I think this is an intriguing spot for the 49ers plus 2.5.
And the venue change, in my opinion, is already incorporated into the line. So keep in mind if you're going to the window to bet this one.
That's Wes Reynolds, Tim Murray. We're sitting in for JVT today. How about we get back to that college football we teased before? You know, it's all about fulfilling teases. We'll do that next. It's The Edge on VSiN. Holiday shopping weekend is the perfect time to sign up for VSiN. New subscribers get 25% off the regular price of an annual all-access membership, plus a $30 credit to the VSiN store. Subscribe today and you'll get our brand new College Hoops Guide, which is overflowing with everything you need for this season. 452 pages, our daily best bets, emails, point spread weekly, 24/7 video streaming, and a chance to pick up a stylish new VSiN t-shirt, mug, or hat for the holidays. Don't miss this deal. Huge annual savings plus a $30 credit to use on great VSiN gear. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Tim Murray, Wes Reynolds, no JVT this week. He is busy in the lab working on that NBA betting guide. By the way, you can get a shirt like this, Wes. What do you think? +7.5?
Absolutely. And you get the great membership to get the t-shirt. You don't have to be like we were in college where we signed up for every credit card known to man at 40% annual percentage rate to get a free t-shirt.
Going to a professional sporting event, that was a rite of passage. Sign up and get a free t-shirt. You're like, I am in. By the way, I learned something yesterday. I'm new to the area, and the wife wanted to get a Christmas tree, a real Christmas tree. So I said, okay, you know, back east, $50-$60. $250, man. And I'm like, okay, because we had like 10-foot ceilings. Maybe we'd get, you know, a 9-foot tree. That was $250. Then the next level was like $200. $150 was the next one. But the salesperson came over and said, just tell us what price you want. We need to get rid of these things.
Right.
So still was more than I was wanting to pay, but we got a little bit of a deal. I was stunned. I guess, you know, living here in the desert, that it's not the most plentiful for pine trees.
This is a Radiohead town, the fake plastic trees, if you will, here in Las Vegas.
I'm all good with the fake plastic tree, but, you know, wife moves across country, happy wife, happy life. So we got the tree, a little bit of a deal, cut him a deal, give him a good tip. So the tree is now up, and holiday shopping, VSiN.com. Get that subscription, 25% off, $30 credit at the VSiN store. All right. So we talked about the breaking news of the day. Once again, Arizona will be hosting San Francisco. We'll be the host of San Francisco, not that Arizona and San Francisco are going to be playing. We'll keep an eye on what's going on in the Maui Invitational. Texas up by 2 right now, midway through the second half. Davidson went off as a 7.5-point dog. College football over the weekend. You know, as Jacob, our producer, will know, I could go on and on and on about Notre Dame, team that I pull for. But that performance this weekend, I bet UNC. I gave it out on my guys. I wrote it up for VSiN.com. Thought it was a great spot for UNC with that defense, with some key pieces missing for Notre Dame offensively. And you lose your All-American safety in the second quarter, and then you shut UNC out in the second half. The performance defensively by Notre Dame, I'm not saying it is good enough to slow down the likes of Alabama, Wes, but that performance in the second half, holding UNC to under 100 yards and no points, was maybe the most impressive thing I saw over the weekend.
Ended up being a split for me because I laid it with Notre Dame, and then I took the over like the whole free world
Everybody
did.
Was on the
Everybody
over.
Everybody was on the over, and we're 14-14 after first quarter. I'm like, we're in business.
It's over.
It's going to be 52-45
I think in-game after the first quarter, Wes, was 83.
Yeah, and it absolutely died. And died a very slow and painful death if you were on the over. But, you know, I'll say what I said Friday. I think this clinched Notre Dame's spot in the college football playoff, essentially for me. I know you're a little bit more cynical on that
Just
remark.
Just don't get blown out by Clemson.
Right. I think if you lose by, like, 2 touchdowns or something, I mean, unless you lose, like, 50 or 60 to nothing, you're going to be in the college football playoff. So if Clemson can get the revenge in that game, I believe it'll be played in Charlotte.
Yep.
Then you're going to have 2 ACC teams. So all of a sudden, then you're down to 2 teams. Could theoretically, I get 2 from the SEC if Florida can beat Alabama in the championship. So a lot of moving parts here, but I think Notre Dame, they're the only team right now. I mean, we all expect Alabama is going to be there, but Notre Dame to me is the only team that's got it locked right now.
Yeah, I do get worried that a 42-10 performance would push them out. However, Oregon, I thought, had an outside chance. I felt like I was maybe on an island here. Mm-hmm. But if they had gone undefeated and beat USC, I thought Oregon had a chance to get in. Now it's over. I think the Pac-12 has pretty much cinched up no playoff appearance
The Big 12 has obviously been out as well. And we're going to see with the Big 10 if Ohio State can get some games played. I still think they somehow find their way in, even if they go 6 or 7-0.
The thing about Ohio State, Wes, is resume-wise, their best win is Indiana. If their game gets canceled against Michigan State this weekend, they will likely play the likes of Wisconsin on December 19th instead of that Big Ten championship game. I still think you'll hear the committee use the eyeball test and find a way to get in. The curious thing is, let's say, hypothetically, Notre Dame and Clemson, Clemson wins by 14. Right. Do they keep them 2-3 and just have them play yet again and keep Ohio State maybe 4 and you get Ohio State and Alabama?
Yeah, because I would think that it would have to be a disaster for Ohio State not to make it. If all of a sudden the Michigan State game gets canceled and then another game gets canceled, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. But I know people are trying to find ways for Cincinnati to kind of get into that top four. And I think Cincinnati is very good.
Agreed.
And I'm not against them if they get into the top four. But I just think there's so many things that are going to happen. Number one, Cincinnati's still behind Florida. And they're still behind Texas A&M, 2 1-loss teams in the SEC. So there's a lot that needs to happen for the Bearcats.
I felt like, Wes, now I think Oregon losing was beneficial to Cincinnati. However, Notre Dame beating North Carolina was detrimental.
Right.
Also, I felt like if Cincinnati, and it seemed like it was trending this way, that they were thinking about playing BYU December 5th. Well, that's off the table now. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati's got COVID issues. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be back until December 12th to play Tulsa. Two games over Tulsa.
And then an AAC championship
against Tulsa
game.
Again.
Yes.
It's unfortunate. It's the world we live in. Taking a look at Heisman right now, Mac Jones, another tremendous effort. Alabama was able to do whatever they wanted offensively against Auburn. 5 touchdown passes for Mac Jones. And Kyle Trask, maybe not the most dominant performance, but still 3 touchdown passes yet again. Is it, in your opinion, as we look at these odds courtesy of DraftKings, Kyle Trask odds on at -110, Mac Jones at +150. Is it just a 2-guy race right now?
I still think Lawrence is in it. Did have a resurgent performance coming back last weekend. I mean, still 5-1 for a guy that didn't play for 5 weeks, and he's still at 5-1. Fields has obviously slipped, kind of out of sight, out of mind, and he had the 3 interceptions against Indiana. And I was saying weeks ago, if you wanted a long shot, Ian Book, but I still think it. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think his numbers.
He doesn't have the numbers, I think, to eclipse these guys. But Lawrence, I still think, is very much in this at 5-1.
And I think it really comes down to, as maybe it shouldn't, I think it comes down to December 19th. Kyle Trask will go up against Mac Jones in the SEC championship. And if Trevor Lawrence goes off against Notre Dame in the ACC championship, recency bias might give Trevor Lawrence an edge. So I agree. At 5-1, it's a little intriguing. That's Wes Reynolds. Tim Murray with you. We'll talk more college football. Who's in? Who's out? Ralph Russo from the Associated Press next, right here on The Edge. If you like to place your bets just before the game, maybe Indiana Providence coming up in just a little bit, Bet Rivers Sportsbook is the perfect place for you. Go to Bet Rivers mobile app on any NFL game day and find 30% less VIG on point spreads and point totals, which means more money in your pocket. As always, get great customer service and one-time playthrough at Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Must be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Indiana. Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Colorado. 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as play Sugar House. It is The Edge. Tim Murray, Wes Reynolds, sitting in for JVT. Wes is always here on Mondays, but I am sitting in for JVT, as we've talked about, down in the lab working on that NBA betting guide, which will be hitting the web sphere shortly. And we got to keep the conversation rolling, though. We were just talking quite a bit about college football, and one of my favorite college football analysts out there has been doing it for quite some time for the Associated Press. It is Ralph Russo. Follow him on Twitter, at Ralph D. Russo, AP. And Ralph, Ohio State is really a fascinating in a fascinating situation, you know, dealing with their own COVID issues. One more game, they're not eligible for the Big Ten. And, you know, when we look at the odds for them to win the championship, those odds haven't dropping all the way off at +550. Do you still see a pretty viable path for the Buckeyes to get to the college football playoff?
It's a weird situation, right? Because they're right. They're a game away from not being allowed to play for the Big Ten championship. And winning a conference championship has always been part of what helps you get into the college football playoff. You don't need to. The Buckeyes themselves got in one year without winning a conference championship. Alabama one year got in without winning a conference championship. So it's not a criteria. And unlike the Big Ten, which set minimums, the college football playoff has left this, has always done this, but especially this year, has left the criteria very wide open, right? No minimum games played. We're not going to require conference championships. We're just going to see how this thing looks at the end and try to pick the best four teams. So there is a viable path here for Ohio State to not be involved in the Big Ten championship game at all and still get in the playoff. But at some point, I guess the playoff committee, you can say there's no minimum, but is Ohio State going to be allowed to play five games and get in? Five games and not necessarily against like the greatest competition. Like they haven't said what the cutoff is, but there has to be some kind of cutoff here. It's just putting this whole thing into an incredibly difficult situation for the committee, for Ohio State, for everybody involved. It's going to create, you know, a controversy like we've never seen. If Ohio State is left in or put or is left out or put in the playoff with only, let's say, five games played.
Ralph, looking at this scenario, obviously, if Ohio State somehow is dropped out of the top four, not having enough games and enough of a sample size for the committee, you look at kind of who's below here. And obviously, the two teams that stand out, Florida and Texas A&M. Texas A&M is kind of like the forgotten team here because we expect Florida is going to win the East Division in the SEC and meet up with Alabama and Atlanta for the SEC championship. But you've got an A&M team that has had a couple games postponed, the Tennessee game, the Ole Miss game, that they intend to make up in the middle of December. So you could see the Aggies potentially be playing SEC conference games after or while it's going on the SEC championship game. Is it realistic that A&M, they were kind of my dark horse before the season, can they realistically get into the top four in your view?
I think so. I feel like the A&M is in a weird position. They're almost like the break glass in case of emergency team. Hey, if everything goes to hell for Ohio State, well, maybe A&M benefits. If Clemson gets swept by Notre Dame and Clemson all of a sudden is on the outside looking in instead of two ACC teams, which I think you're in position to have right now, maybe A&M gets in. I think it would be harder for A&M if Alabama beats Florida, and that sort of eliminates Florida. And then do you then elevate A&M, or I should say vice versa, really? If Florida beats Alabama and then you have two SEC teams, are you going to put third SEC team in? I think A&M has to watch its back a little bit to see what's going on with Cincinnati. Now, that would be unprecedented to have a non-Power 5 team in there, but I think it's at least viable that that could be a situation. You know, it's funny, like, I don't look at A&M and think, boy, that looks like a playoff team, but I can come up with four or five different scenarios that we just laid out there where they end up being the default number four.
We're talking to Ralph Russo from the Associated Press at Ralph D. Russo AP on Twitter. And Ralph, you always do those scenarios, and I love it. It's a tradition unlike any other. Seeing your tweets on whether it be Sunday afternoons about, you know, one's got to go. And Wes alluded to it. I am a bit more skeptical just because I'm a bit of a worrier when it comes to the team that I pull for, which is Notre Dame. Does Notre Dame? I mean, they can't lose 59-0 like Wisconsin did a handful of years ago against Ohio State. But, you know, they're going to be about a 10-point dog probably in the ACC championship. What do they need to do, in your opinion, if they do beat Syracuse and Wake Forest, to ensure that they're in the playoff?
Yeah, I am with you to a certain degree, Tim. I like the idea that, like what is the level of beating that they would have to get to get squeezed out? You know, it's almost one of those deals where, like, I don't know what it is right now, but, you know, to use the phrase, I'll know it when I see it.
That's a good point.
I have to see the way this game, because you can say, well, they lose by 17, but what does that mean? Does that mean it was a 10-point game late in the fourth quarter and Ian Book throws a pick six. Like, that sounds like a game that could validate Notre Dame. Is it a 24-point game? Is it a 10-point game, but it was really a 24-point game and Notre Dame sort of throws two touchdowns on at the end to get a backdoor cover or something? Like, so it's hard to lay out an exact scenario, but I think if we can all relate to this. If Notre Dame hangs with Clemson, if it looks like a competitive football game, I think Notre Dame should be fine to get in to the college football playoff. I think if it just looks like a competitive football game, Notre Dame should have a ticket punched.
Ralph, usually when we talk at this point of the season and we're doing the college football playoff rankings, the phenomenon or the term of style points usually comes into play, obviously, as people are jockeying for position here. But at this point of the season, you look at some of the top teams in their games this week. Obviously, Notre Dame, 34-point favorite against Syracuse. Clemson, 21.5 at Virginia Tech. Ohio State, 22 at Michigan State. You now see this get priced into the market at this point of the year. That doesn't mean that these big favorites still can't cover and win big, but do you think this year in this COVID 2020 that the style points really are going to matter as much as it has in years past in terms of these teams jockeying for these top four positions?
So I don't think so. I don't know if it's necessarily a COVID thing. Might be somewhat related to COVID. I think if you just see the way this race is playing out, as we alluded to before with Texas A&M, there's just not a lot of teams here, right? We seem to be locked in with Alabama, Florida, Clemson, Notre Dame, and let's see if Ohio State plays enough games. And if those five teams sort of sort it out, like, I don't necessarily see them needing a lot of big wins because there's not two or three other teams breathing down their throats, right? In past years, you may have had a situation where you've got a couple of teams that have similar resumes and you're kind of trying to figure out, like, well, you know, how did they look in that win and how many points did they win by? Like, in this situation, I don't know if I really see that. I think it's sort of just like, hey, just win, baby, right? Just right. Win and you're in, and I think it should be fine because you don't have a pool of teams that are bearing down where you're sort of going to be looking at resumes. You know, again, the most complicating thing here is whether Ohio State will play, right? Yep. If Ohio State can get on the field over the next couple of weeks, get to the Big Ten championship game and win all those games, I think everything else sort of falls into place pretty well. Notre Dame keeps it competitive against Clemson. We figure out we get two ACC teams in there. If Alabama does its thing, then we get one SEC team in there. And if Florida happens to upset Alabama, well, then it gets complicated as far as can we get two SEC teams in and two ACC teams in. But I think we got five teams that will figure out what's going to go on with the playoff.
Yeah, Alabama now 28.5-point favorite at LSU. Quite the turnaround from 1 year. Maybe some anger from Alabama losing to LSU last year. Hey, Ralph, before we let you run, we got about a minute. We were just briefly talking about the Heisman Trophy. 5-1 are the odds for Trevor Lawrence. As you would expect, Kyle Trask, Mac Jones, the two heavy favorites right now. Do you think Trevor Lawrence still has a shot to be hoisting a big trophy at some point later this year?
I do, and I think it comes down to this, Tim. If I said, who do you want on your team, Kyle Trask, Mac Jones, or Trevor Lawrence, which one do you pick?
Trevor Lawrence.
There you go. I think that could sway some voters. I think if the stats are relatively close, a lot of people might look at it and say, listen, this is like the best quarterback we've seen in college football in 15 years. I got to give him a vote. I agree that Trask and Jones should be the favorites right now, but I think Lawrence has a chance to make up the ground here.
Well, and you always hear, Wes, right? The Heisman moment. Well, what could be bigger than a Heisman moment? ACC championship. Mm-hmm. He throws five touchdowns.
You know? And you've got the guy that's likely the number one pick in the NFL draft, kind of been the face of the game yep. in the last 2 years. So absolutely at 5-1.
Hey, Ralph, great stuff as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Ralph Russo, one of the best, covers college football for the Associated Press, at Ralph D. Russo, AP, on Twitter. It's been a fun first hour. We'll get you updated. Got a little college hoops coming down to the wire, Texas and Davidson. And, oh, by the way, George Shahuri in his weekly spot from Pro Football Focus will join us top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. It's The Edge right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.